Right now it is time for Real News with Brian Ross. Brian joins us on a Thursday morning at this time, and we take a look at some of the stories that we're following. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning to you, Marshall, and good news from the labor front.
Good news on the labor front, and you know what's good about it is Joe Biden, in his own really weird way, and seems to get things done. The White House and the department has stepped in, and they negotiated all overnight and avoided what could have been a crippling rail strike.
Very important. I had three members of the cabinet, the Secretary of Agriculture, Transportation, and Labor all got involved, and they got a deal, which now goes to the railroad workers themselves to vote on. But right now it averts the shutdown that so many had feared was going to take place starting tomorrow.
Well, it's that is so much good news that it's unexplainable, and there's a lot of presidents that probably wouldn't have been able to get that done. I think, but with his string of successes, and the Democratic Party now behind him, and you know he got it done, good for him, and good for everybody that went in on that. So that's,
of course, underlying all this is that workers are demanding better pay, better working conditions, as they have every right to, especially the railroad workers who, you know, have kept the country going really during the pandemic, and they wanted such outrageous demands as time off to see doctors.
Yeah, I know. You know, you put that in. I broke the story yesterday with the help of the Poughkeepsie Journal, talking about health care costs in our area, where the top seven employees of New Vance Health, with bonuses because of COVID-19 money layout, made over $1 million. One of them made over $7 million, most in between $1 and $3 million. That's the seven top office holders. That's a lot of money out of a hospital budget.
And they want to shut down the birthing center here in Sharon.
Yeah, it all ties together. And when you look at it, well, we'll let that go for a second, because we do have to touch upon the death of the Queen. Whether you what you think about the monarchy or not, when somebody really has reigned as a monarch, a peaceful monarch for over 70 years, and in her 70 years as monarch, handed over so much of what was the British Empire, you have to say a farewell to an amazing person, one of the most recognizable people probably on the face of the earth.
Well, seven decades of grace and wisdom during very troubled times, she was admired widely for just that, and for not really inserting herself into the politics of the moment, although we don't really know from behind the scenes what was going on. And I think the new monarch, the king, who's been much more active politically, we'll see what he does. It'll be a different reign, and lots of pressure on him to continue the sort of the uphold the tradition that his mother put in place. He's pledged to do so. We'll see. But already you're starting to hear talk about the cost of the monarchy, the fact that they've been able to increase their billion-dollar fortune because they don't pay taxes. Lots of questions about the monarchy that, of course, are going to arise, even as the Queen is being, her casket is being viewed, and the funeral is about to begin next week, I guess.
Well, you know, there's questions about the monarchy that come and go and rise and fall. That's something that won't change because, Brian, most people who are alive now in England, probably 70% of the population have never lived under anybody but a queen. Never mind.
Right.
Now they have to get used to say, "God save the king." I mean, you laugh about it, but it really is quite a substantial change for the citizens of Great Britain.
It is, and so far with King Charles, we've seen him on some interesting viral videos exploding with his staff about a cluttered desk or a pen that didn't work. We'll see. He's in a different age and a different era, and so far he's gone viral for his wealth, I think well-founded remarks, and some of his little sniffs he's had with the staff.
Well, as most people get set to retire at that age, he's just beginning his career.
Exactly. He's waiting for this job for a while now. He's got it.
All right. Let's come back to this country, and I don't know whether it's good or bad. I've got a feeling that it's probably going to be good in the long run. When you take a look now that all the pre-election candidates, all the runoffs, all that are set, 92% of the people that Donald Trump endorsed in the primaries ended up winning for the Republican Party. And as been pointed out, that the Republican leader in the Senate, there's a lot of candidates up there that are shaky candidates that they're worried about.
I'll say, and the Republicans certainly weren't helped with Lindsey Graham's introduction of a nationwide ban on abortions legislation that he's pushing. McConnell has said that wouldn't happen. Graham himself said it should be up to the states, but now he's introducing legislation with a nationwide ban. If there's already anger about Republicans over the abortion ruling from the Supreme Court, this will only expand it. And at a time when Republicans do want to talk about the economy and Joe Biden, they find themselves again on the defensive over this issue of abortion. And I think they know what, from the polls, what's going on. So this is essentially Mitch McConnell's nightmare. He's got these handpicked candidates in Donald Trump who are not doing well at all. And now Lindsey Graham is adding some gasoline to the fire over the happiness of many, many voters over the abortion ruling. So it's a tough time for Republicans, and the polls are starting to shift. You see the Biden approval ratings inching up. They're still not great, but the chances of the Republicans taking the Senate seem to be greatly diminished.
All right, let's turn on to the next thing on the horizon. That is happening with the big meeting between China and Russia and other members of that bloc, which basically they talk about 3 billion population, so it's a major bloc. But Putin enters this in a very weakened state.
I'll say, with his army in retreat in Ukraine, criticism growing in Moscow. And so far, as best I know from what I've seen, China has given its support, but not its arms or its weapons or resupply. Russia has been forced to go to Iran and to North Korea. So, you know, they need China very much, and we'll see what happens out of that. But as you say, Putin goes a little bit hat in hand.
And what's amazing about this whole situation in the Ukraine, if they continue to do what they're doing and they strategize wisely, obviously they're getting very good strategy information from their allies. You know, them retaking the Crimea might not be that far of a fetched of an idea.
Well, that's one of the big questions, is how far does Ukraine want to push, and to what extent will the allies support those moves? What's accepted sort of as a place where they could say, all right, enough is enough. Hard to know. And as some have said, you know, Mr. Putin plans to militarize the winter by cutting back supplies of gasoline or gas, natural gas, that heats homes across Europe. Will cold homes in Germany and the UK continue to will that be enough to change the positions of the governments in Europe to whether they want to continue to support the Ukrainian push?
All right, and we'll come back once again very quickly to the January 6th committee. Mark Meadows now has complied with the terms of the Department of Justice subpoena, so he's another one off the list that you can check off that list now.
Yeah, and in that realm of, there's more coming there. I thought they were done, but they've got more televised hearings, we're told. They continue to push. And I think one thing that all our listeners should take a look at and perhaps get to the bookstore is this new book by Peter Baker and his wife, Susan Glasser. She's with the New Yorker. He's with the New York Times. It's called The Divider. It's a really, you thought you knew everything about the Trump administration and what they did. This book is just full of bombshells. And Peter Baker in this morning's Times gives an account of some of them, including the effort by Donald Trump to try to buy Greenland. And it was for real. And the aides around him were trying to, oh, my God, what are we going to do? They actually had to put together a task force to see if they could negotiate. Denmark was furious, had no part about it. But this book is just full of insider stuff about the Trump administration. That's a real head shaker. Like, are you kidding? This really happened?
All right, well, you know.
He wanted to trade Greenland for Puerto Rico. That was his plan.
Yeah, some things you just say that's not believable, but you know what? It is. Yeah. It is believable. It is. It's unbelievable. All right. Well, it's always great to chat with you, and we'll speak to you again. Have a great weekend.
Ken Marshall, I want a reminder tomorrow at the Hotchkiss School Library, on behalf of the Lakefield Journal, I'll be hosting a panel with Marty Baron, the former editor of the Washington Post, and John Costin, the new editor of the Lakefield Journal, and Subrata Day, who's a top executive at Vice, to talk about the future of American journalism as we continue the 125th anniversary of the Lakefield Journal, with our big newsprint jubilee in Lakeville on the Saturday evening. So tickets are free for the seminar tomorrow at the Hotchkiss School. I hope maybe we'll see you there.
I'd love to be there. I can't get there, but with Vice now, which is, by the way, a very credible news network, looking for a little bit of possible Saudis might be financing them. There's going to be a lot of chance for people to ask questions and hear and really find out about what journalism is and where it is at this current state of time.
What's your question, Marshall? I'll ask your question. You're not going to be there. I'll ask it on your behalf.
Well, because I like Vice News. I liked it when it was on TV, more when it was, I think they had a deal with HBO and stuff like that. And you know what? It's always the question of Saudi money or not. But you know what? There comes a time where you want the light to shine in. And Vice News, I think, does a very, very credible job with what they do. And so it's just a question to put, you know, where does the line stop with this or not? Because, like I said, Vice, I think, is a very important part of the scene now. And if they get that backing, they could become even more important. So,
right. And the question is, does money buy influence?
Yeah, that's
over the content.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. But I don't think so. I think the people that found Vice are smart enough. And hopefully that's true. So
we'll raise the question on your behalf.
All right. Thanks, Brian. We'll speak to you next week.
You bet, Marshall.
Take care. Brian Ross with Real News. Of course, you can find Brian at his own website. Also, on demand, robinhoodradio.com. Click on Real News with Brian Ross.